This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
So I've got Professor Bob Goetz here from the University of Minnesota, and he is in Manchester as part of his job as the leader of the SOFIA Community Task Force. So could we start by talking about what actually SOFIA is?
Sure. SOFIA is a new NASA project. It's called the Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy, SOFIA, which means that it flies in the stratosphere. That's way above the normal level of the atmosphere. It's the highest place where normal aircraft go. And we get above water vapor, which is what absorbs infrared radiation trying to come into the ground from outer space. So if we're above that water, then we can see things in outer space in the infrared more easily.
So you've just got a telescope in the back of a plane.
We've got a telescope in the back of a plane, but it's a huge one. It's 100 inches in diameter. 2.5 meters.
So that just a normal infrared.
Yeah, and so it's got to be a 747 aircraft, the biggest commercial aircraft around.
Is this the first mission that's been flown on a plane, or has there been previous?
This is not the first mission that's been flown on a plane. Back in 1967, we were flying a little 12-inch telescope inside a Learjet, and later on, we flew a 30-inch telescope inside a military aircraft called a Starlifter. But now we've got this big one.
Okay.
Astronomers always have to have things bigger and better.
Of course. If you've got an infrared telescope, I guess you can't have any glass or anything in front of it. So is this open to the air?
We can't have any kind of a window because it would absorb the infrared. So we actually have to look out of an open hole in the airplane. And otherwise, we would not be able to see the infrared. So this airplane has to be able to fly with the side open. And then the people in it have to be behind a bulkhead that where they're pressurized.
So who do you get to fly this plane? Is it just a normal pilot, or do you have some astronomer who's been trained up?
No, we have some NASA test pilots who fly this plane. We're trained to fly shuttles, actually.
Oh, wow. And do observers actually get to go up in the plane, or is it just...
Astronomers actually get to go up in this airplane, and that's fun because you get to ride in the cockpit sometimes.
Wow.
And get a good view.
Something that's not really allowed on commercial flights
anymore.
That's right. Yeah. If you've got a plane that's flying along and you're observing the sky, how do you account for any turbulence, any motion of the plane?
Well, the telescope has gyroscopes on it, which are devices that stabilize the platform so that it's very, very still. And then the airplane kind of flies around the telescope. The telescope is suspended on what we call an air bearing. It kind of floats on air, and it has these gyroscopes on it that make it really, really stable. And if the turbulence gets too big, then the airplane will start banging into the telescope platform, and we have to clamp it all down and wait for the turbulence to stop.
So let's go into a bit more detail on this. And how far up in the atmosphere do you go?
We're going to go up as high as 45,000 feet, a little bit around 15,000 meters. And at that point, the amount of air above us is so low that the water in the air is minuscule, small.
So you don't get any interference?
We get very little interference.
And the instruments on the telescope, are these going to be something that you can change regularly, or do you have to have the same instruments on it all
the time? We can change these instruments after every flight. That's one advantage of an airborne observatory as compared to a spacecraft. We can fly for 10 hours with one instrument, and when we come to Earth, we can put on a different instrument that's used for a different kind of observation. We can also put on brand new technology whenever we get it. On a spacecraft, you're often flying with 25-year-old technology.
Yeah. And you say 10-hour flights, so you can go pretty much anywhere in the world.
We can go with this aircraft anywhere in the world.
We can fly
across water, and so if we want to see things in the south, we can fly to New Zealand, for example. If we want to see things way in the north, we can fly to Alaska.
So I guess those are all the advantages you have over the ground-based telescopes. And
that's right. It's a mobile telescope, so it can go anywhere, anytime to see anything.
Are there any disadvantages to having it in a plane?
Well, the disadvantages are that it's very expensive to operate. And
how much are we talking?
We're talking $80 million a year for about 100 flights, so it's $800,000 per flight.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. And also one disadvantage of the aircraft compared to some of the spacecraft is you can't see quite all the wavelengths you can see from a spacecraft. So with spacecraft, we often can see things that you can't see from the aircraft because they get above all the atmosphere. The other disadvantage, of course, is there's a limit to the size telescope we can fly.
Yeah.
We can fly a 100-inch telescope on a 747, and that's about the biggest. But on the ground, we can have huge, huge telescopes to look at wavelengths that do come through the air to the ground.
I guess you need a bigger plane.
That's space station.
So let's talk a bit about the science that you'll be doing with SOFIA then.
Sure.
Is there any kind of science that is best suited to SOFIA as opposed to ground-based or space-based telescopes?
Well, SOFIA is going to be an excellent platform for doing molecular spectroscopy and atomic spectroscopy, and this is what we need to understand the physics and chemistry of the star formation process. And you can do some of this from the ground, but to get the whole picture at all the colors of light that we need to look at, you need to fly in this plane from the air, too. If you were to just take what we could get with the ground-based telescopes, then you would just know part of the story.
With all the observations, is there going to be plans that you can interrupt the observations that are going on if something special happens, if there's a supernova or something, getting quick
responses?
Yeah,
with this aircraft, we have the ability to actually reprogram what we're doing in flight. So if we were to get word of something really fantastic going on in the universe, we could reprogram the flight right there on the spot and fly a new flight path in order to accommodate the new observation.
We talk a bit about the transient events, that kind of...
Transient events are things that occur on the spur of the moment. And we have a bunch of things like that that do occur in astronomy. An occultation might occur. That's when an object that's nearby, like a planet or an asteroid or one of these Kuiper belt objects, comes in front of a star, then that blocks the light from the star. And the way in which it blocks the light can tell us whether the object that does the occulting has an atmosphere or whether it has rings or maybe moons around it. It does this by casting a shadow on the ground. And so if you're in the shadow, you can see what the shadow looks like as it goes across you and learn all these things. With this airplane, we can predict where the shadow is going to be and fly into it. If you were to look at it from the ground, you'd have to be in the right place at the right time with the right telescope.
So that's a very big advantage that you've
got.
That's
a very big advantage.
Are you going to look for planets around other stars, anything like that?
We actually are going to look for atmospheres in planets around other stars. When planets around other stars come in front of their star, the way in which they block the light from the star can tell us what kind of an atmosphere they have and whether or not it's an atmosphere, for example, where life might be. And we have machines on this telescope that can actually make measurements that will tell us about that.
Going back a step to the logistics of all of this again, when you've got a plane, it's going to have exhaust coming out of it somewhere.
Yes.
There's no interference from that.
Well, we look out of the back of the plane, so you might worry about the heat from the exhaust, and infrared is heat, interfering with our observations. But it turns out that the exhausts stay below the hole that we look out of. And we proved that this is going to be so by flying a Learjet with an infrared camera on it alongside a 747 to see where the exhaust went. So we know that we're clear.
Have you had to kind of make modifications to the plane?
Yeah, we've had to make some huge modifications to this airplane. We had to seal off the front of the plane so that the people can be pressurized and live normally, and the back of the plane can be at atmospheric pressure. So we had to cut the plane in the middle, kind of, and put a 21-foot diameter pressure bulkhead, it's called, in the airplane that seals it off. And nobody's ever put that big a bulkhead in an airplane before. It's twice as big in diameter as anything ever put in.
Wow.
Plus, it's got to be very stable against flexing in any way, because the telescope's bearing would be interfered with if there were flexure. So there's about 350,000 pounds of force wanting to push that bulkhead off the back of the airplane, and we have to have bolts and structural members to prevent that from happening. The other thing we did was we cut a hole that took out about a quarter of the circumference of the fuselage. Biggest hole anybody's ever cut in an aircraft. It's basically 10 by 10 feet.
Did you have to change any of the electronics or anything around?
Yeah, the question is, what did we have to do to modify the plane to accommodate this? First of all, we had to make it structurally sound. Then we had to divert all the flight controls and the hydraulic systems that operate the tail and do that so that it still feels like a plane that flies right.
What stage are you at with SOFIA now?
Well, we're going to open the door on the plane for science at the end of next month. We've already opened the door to prove we can fly with the door open. We did that around Christmas time. In April, late April, we'll open the door and let light go down the telescope and publish a picture.
There must have been a lot of test flights that have been going on. I guess they've all been
successful.
Yes, we've
been flying dozens of test flights, actually. First of all, we had to fly about a dozen flights with the aircraft before it was modified at all to prove that we understood the aircraft. We had to put little strain gauges all over it and fly it around and stress it out and see that we understood the way it deformed. Then we had to design, based on our knowledge of that, the hole that we were going to put in the aircraft. Then we had to fly it all around with the door shut and prove that we understood the way it was deforming with a hole cut in it. And now we're flying around with the door open.
So if people see a plane flying around with the door open, it's nothing to worry about.
Not to worry.
That's just a fear.
And we've actually had to land with the door open because it got stuck, and we could do that too.
That's good to know.
That's what we thought.
And is this going to be a long-term project? I mean, most space telescopes are only a few years.
This project is going to last till at least 2035. The aircraft is already 40 years old, and I think that since we've rebuilt it, it could last another 40 years. If it's going well and people are liking the science of it in 2035, maybe it will go longer.
Well, good luck with it all, and thank you for talking to us today.
Well, it's been a pleasure to be here.